We're talking about a stronger church for the 21st century. A stronger church. I love to laugh, but brother, sometimes I just want to cry. We're supposed to have pastors here. I wanted pastors. And some of the questions have been incredibly dumb. A church that's stronger in its vision for evangelism. We need a church that's stronger in its vision for evangelism. This is how we build a church from scratch, from the get-go. But this is also how we renew a church from a mixed multitude toward a strong biblical church. It comes back to evangelism. And winning people to Christ. And I believe one of the things that you have to do if you've got a mixed multitude, weak church, hasn't been built on a good foundation, is to turn your attention away from the old lukewarm members and just focus on building the church properly and scripturally from this point on. You can't go back in time. And you can't say, well, I wish I had this 40 years ago. Well, okay, but we can only do what we start from today with what we know. But it's almost like in your mind, you're going to build a new church. But you're not going to necessarily kick everybody out. That's really not fair. Not quickly, anyway. Because you're changing the rules in the middle of the road here. So you've got to be very patient, or you would actually be unfair to the people that you have led wrongly actually to this point. But focusing on evangelism and winning people to Christ and dealing with them properly from the very beginning of their Christian life and building up the church that way. And we have the seed. The seed, which is the gospel, and that seed has power. And so we need to plant a lot of it, as much as possible, every way that's possible. It's like fishing. If you want to catch a lot of fish, you just put a lot of hooks out in the water. And the more hooks you got out there in the water, the more possibility there is you're going to catch a fish. And you need to go where the fish are biting. I've done a lot of fishing. I like fishing. And I know that fish don't bite the same in every place. Even in the same lake. There's different parts of the lake that are better fishing territory. And personally, I like to catch fish. Fishing is okay, but my favorite part of fishing is catching a fish. And Jesus likened evangelism and to fishing. And I know people, men, see, if I were a fisherman, And there was a bunch of lakes here. The town that I grew up in is called Lakeland, Florida, because it's got a whole bunch of lakes. It's a beautiful town. But not all of those lakes are good fishing lakes. Some of those lakes, you're going to just sit there all day and you're not going to catch a fish. And so it'd be very stupid for me to go sit at that lake all day, every day, unless I just like to sit. Some people like to fish, not because they like to catch fish, because they just like to sit and do nothing. But if you want to catch fish, you've got to go where the fish bite. And that's true in evangelism. There's all kinds of people out there. There's old people and young people, and there's rich people and poor people, and women and men and kids, you know, everything. All kinds of people out there. They don't all bite the same. Some parts of your town are going to be more profitable for fishing than other parts of your town. We need to fish everywhere because, it's not exactly like fishing. And we need to preach the gospel to everybody, but we need to focus. I would think a man that wants to catch fish would focus more of his attention on the place where fish bite more. I believe, door knocking is important. And that it's an important part of evangelism. Just a part of, though. Just a part of. It's not to be all and end all. But it's one way. It's the way, the main way to systematically, get your map of the community, mark it off, and systematically go through that community like that, which is what we've got to do to obey the Great Commission. But that's only one thing. And there's all kinds of things, and there's all kinds of ministries, evangelistic ministries. And I want to just put my hook out everywhere, get my nets out everywhere, as broad as possible, and then focus on those places where the fishing's best. Effective tract distribution program. It's not just a matter of, hey, folks, let's go give some tracts. It's, hey, folks, let's learn how to go give tracts. Let's learn what kind of tract to have. Let's learn how to use that tract. Let's learn how to introduce that tract. Let's learn how to follow up on that tract. Educating the people to have an effective tract distribution program. And to have that tract in your pocket, but the right tract, and know how to use it. It's all planned. It's all planned. Education. Preaching on the streets. Brother Lewis was telling me how that he has been preaching on the streets some in Chicago, at the University of Chicago, and in Hyde Park. And he doesn't just go down there and stand on the street and preach. He's got a plan. Some of his people are there. And some of his people are listening to him. That might be a little tricky, kind of a trick. But, wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. Because when somebody's listening, other people want to come up and listen because they're afraid to come up by themselves. But then he has people that are trained how to deal with people. But he has this little simple thing. I was listening to him explain this, and I noticed this one little simple thing. He said he trains his people, don't give the tract during the preaching, if they're listening, right? Because you don't want them reading that while you're preaching. But see, little things like that, you tweak. You're tweaking and thinking and educating and getting better and finding out, that's what you do when you fish. You can't just say, I'm going to buy me a rod and some kind of a lure, or I'm going to go out there and catch fish. No, you won't. You won't catch a thing. It takes a lot of education to catch fish. Usually. I remember in Washington State, when we lived there for 10 years on an island, Whidbey Island, and I wanted to learn salmon fishing. Well, the salmon run by that island every fall on the way back to the rivers to lay their eggs at the end of their life cycle. Right by the shores of that island, right where I live. I lived less than a mile from the shore. So I asked around and I bought all of the equipment. I got all the right kind of equipment. I like equipment. So I got all the equipment. And I went out there, and there were lots of fishermen. I knew I was in the right place because that's where the fishermen were. And so I started casting it out there. They were doing that. And I about threw my arm off that first day. And people, they were catching them. I had the same lure. I had the same rod. I caught nothing. And I went to my pastor, who was a great fisherman. He's dead now, but he was a great fisherman. I said, Pastor, this is my situation. What do you think? He said, show me what you're doing. He said, no, right there. He said, you got to, throw it out there, but then you just, and then that lure is fluttering in the water. I said, okay. I went back out the next day, immediately started catching salmon. My boys and I caught 220 pounds of salmon that fall. We learned the technique. I could still be out there today throwing that lure and getting nothing had I not fine-tuned that. It was a good method. Everything was right, but it needed a little fine-tuning, just a little fine-tuning. So you're constantly trying to find different ways to evangelize, but you're thinking about it. You're planning. You're trying to make it better, more effective. You're not just going out there doing the same thing all the time. It never works. You never get any fruit. And you're content with that? I'm not. I want to learn that technique. Now, I'm not talking about this carnal squeeze stuff, but I'm talking about learning, getting better, more wise in how to deal with people in the nursing home or whatever it might be, wherever that hook is out, dealing with young people, trying to get in somewhere with young people, trying to have evangelistic young people's ministry, trying to minister to the old people everywhere. Many hooks as possible. Why? You're going to catch more fish. Sow more seed. If you've got a farmer and he's got a huge field and he's got a huge bag of seed over here and he takes that seed and he plants that seed properly in 1 acre over there and he just ignores all those other acres, what kind of crops are he going to get? You sow more seed, you get more. You've got the potential to win more people to Christ. It's just going at it, gospel Bible studies in homes, finding places where people are interested, and then asking if you can have a gospel Bible study in that home, and maybe their neighbors might come, and building it up. And it doesn't just happen, but you make it happen. And you plan, and you learn, and you plant a lot of hooks. Ministries to nursing homes and schools and truck stops and prisons and whatever, wherever people are. And training and training and training workers. You got two people that are on fire for evangelism? Well, you train those two. And the more you learn, the more you train them. And you keep learning more. I've got a book that my wife and I put together called Ideas for Evangelism. Ideas for Evangelism. I thought Independent Baptists would love that book. I don't sell many of any book. But I thought that book would be a hot one. It's not. Anyway, it should be because it's got a bunch of ideas for evangelism. And you'd think the preachers would want some ideas for evangelism. I would. And so that book's available for free online. I can't sell it, so it's free. And it's not true, but I give it away. Ideas, all kinds of ideas. Ideas we've gotten from a bunch of people. Ideas we've gotten ourselves. My wife's a great soul winner. Really, the most effective one I've ever known. And ideas, all kinds of hooks, sowing the seed. And then prayer, of course. A church that's stronger in evangelism is going to find ways to pray more for evangelism. That evangelism is going to be a big part of the prayers. I told you about the church that I went to, Independent Baptist Church, and the whole prayer meeting was for cancer, for sickness. We should pray for sickness. But if that's all you pray for, that shows you don't have a spiritual church. On our Wednesday night, our midweek service, our main midweek service, we do three things. It has three parts. And the first part is testimony time. And that's a half hour. And that's testimony time. And the people will quote a verse that's been a blessing to them. And the people will, but more than that, usually they will talk about, they will ask prayer for lost people. Our church is just all about evangelism. really. I mean, it's just, it's what the people just think about all the time. And so the prayer requests are, yeah, we talk about sickness. Yeah, we pray for the man that's got cancer right now, but it's evangelism. And they mention these names. And what I try to teach them to do is, don't give us 50 names of your relatives. I'm not going to pray for 50 names of people I don't know, and nobody is. Give us one or two names. Tell us something about that person that if we don't congregationally know them, tell us something memorable about that person, you know, like Mani Babu. That's what I do in my prayer letters. I will mention people. I could, you know, list hundreds of people in my prayer letter that we're working with in all the villages. That would accomplish nothing. But I'll mention a witch doctor, or I'll mention a 14-year-old boy that's being persecuted, and people remember that. And that's what we teach our. Everything is taught. You don't just do stuff. You're constantly figuring out why you're doing it. How can you do it better? How can I educate the people so that we know what we're doing? Everything. Music, evangelism, everything. It's just constant learning, growing. The preacher, learning new things. Learning new things. And then he's teaching the people. And the congregation is growing. And that's what, in evangelism, prayer. And effectual prayer meetings for evangelism. Prayer meeting before you go out on evangelism. Prayer meeting after you come back from evangelism. And focusing the people's attention on souls instead of just their health needs. I hate to go to old people's Sunday school classes in America. I don't do it anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. An old people's Sunday school class, you know what they do? They sit there for about a half hour talking about their aches and pains and Uncle Bobby in the hospital. And I know that's a reality of old age. But I don't want a bunch of that. I don't want to be consumed by it. So you teach the people to focus their attention on souls. In a study of 576 growing churches, Tom Rainier, who I don't recommend, he's a Southern Baptist, but anyway, he's got a great statistic here. He said this, and he's examined churches. Focusing the church's attention on intercession for the lost has brought the Lord's blessing time after time. One pastor shared the thought that praying for the lost did more to refocus our church than any single factor. We became a church with an outward focus after being inwardly focused for years. Most churches that are effectually reaching the lost have broken out of the rut of prayer as usual and have experienced wonderful results brought about by effectual emphasis on praying for the lost. It's teaching the people how to focus their prayer attention and their daily prayer lists and getting a prayer list. Do you have a prayer list? I don't know how to pray without a list in some ways. And you got a list, and it grows. And that's your daily prayer. And then the whole church, if the individual members have daily prayer for souls, then the whole church has got prayer for souls. But it's the pastor that leads the people in these things and keeps the people. Everything tends to go down. The second law of thermodynamics operates in the spiritual realm. So it's the pastor's job and the leader's job to keep it going up. Plowing. We're talking about a church that's stronger in evangelism. Sowing, prayer, plowing. No crop. There can be no crop until the ground is effectually plowed. When Israel came back to the land, in 1900, that was the turning point where larger numbers began to come back. I just finished a book called Jews in Fighter Jets. It's a 500-page book. Bill Hardy's going to mock that one day. And it's a great book. It is a very good book because I've gone to Israel a lot and I love Israel. It's the last 2,500 years of the history of Israel. And anyway, I think a lot about Israel. That course also, by the way, has 15 PowerPoints with 2,500 slides. It's a whole illustrated history of Israel. Well, when Israel started coming back into the land at about 1900, the ground had sat there for 2,000 years, basically unused. The Arabs grazed some sheep and like that, but they didn't do much with the land. And said old land was hard as a rock. And so those Jews came back and they started pounding on that land, breaking up the soil, breaking up the soil, getting out the rocks. That's the rockiest place in the world. Removing the rocks, plowing the ground, because nothing could happen till they got it all plowed up right. And then they could start farming, and then they could start doing some things. Well, that's spiritually true. The plowshare is the law of God. The plowshare is the law of God. Romans 3:19. Here's the plowshare, which we need to learn how to use, to learn how to use the law properly. Romans 3:19, now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them that who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may be become guilty before God. And so the law prepares the way for the gospel, plowing that old hard ground for the reception of the seed of the gospel, showing that man that he is a sinner before God. The Ten Commandments, and plowing that ground, showing him that he's lost, showing him what God's really like. That's the purpose of the law. Plowing that ground. Ground. Peter, think about Peter. Preached on the day of Pentecost. 3,000 souls were saved. But you know what? That ground had been plowed for 1,500 years with the law of Moses. That ground, those Jews that were standing there, had been plowed for 1,500 years by the law of Moses. That very law that we're told prepares for the gospel is the law that had been plowed in Judah. And Peter stood up there and reaped the fruit, reaped the results of a whole bunch of plowing. He did not stand, friend, Peter did not stand up in Athens. Paul did not stand up in Athens and see 3,000 people saved. No ground had been plowed in Athens. Paul was just then plowing the ground. In Nepal, most of what we're doing is plowing. These are people that think I wrote the Bible, that don't even know who Jesus is historically, many of them. So there's no plowing been done there. They don't have a clue who God is, what sin is, what anything is. So most of what we're doing as we go out is just plowing. Plowing's hard work. I never did plow, but I know it's hard work because I watch people plow. It's hard work plowing. You don't get any seed that day. You're just plowing a lot. There were times in America where a lot of plowing had been done, and then there was a lot of reaping. But today, in most places in America, the people are as biblically ignorant as somebody in Nepal in some places.